This Janet Meffer Today podcast is brought to you by Enemies Within the Church, a documentary that will expose the false teachers and underlying agenda to undermine the influence of Christ across the world. For more information, visit enemieswithinthechurch.com.
This is Janet Meffer Today.
Our confidence is in Christ alone.
Are we going to stand with God, come what may?
If the Word of God says it, I believe it.
And that's the way it is.
And now, here is Janet Meffer.
Welcome, everybody. Great to have you with us for another broadcast day. I want to talk a little bit about something that Pastor Andrew Brunson had to say recently. You'll recall Pastor Brunson because he was the man, the pastor who was falsely imprisoned in Turkey for 2 years. A lot of us, I know I prayed for him. I know a lot of us prayed for him while he was incarcerated and being religiously persecuted. And President Trump and his staff did a very great thing in securing his release. But ever since he was released, he's been making the rounds from time to time, doing a few interviews here and there. And he appeared recently at the Western Conservative Summit, and this took place at Colorado Christian University. During a panel, it really was a Q&A that he did, getting questions back and forth. He was talking about his reflections on what he's noticed about the United States since coming back after his imprisonment. And I think these words are so important to be heeded, because he not only has the perspective of an American and as a pastor and as a Christian, but he has the experience of having been over in a Muslim country and having suffered persecution himself. And now he has the wisdom of somebody with both of those experiences that he's bringing to bear on our situation as American Christians. So I want you to listen to some of what Pastor Andrew Brunson had to say on the issue of religious persecution. Now, first of all, he was asked, how did your experience change your thoughts about the issue of religious liberty? This is cut one.
I don't think anything really changed, because I'd been working in Turkey for years, and there isn't the degree of liberty that we would like there.
Right.
But it certainly underlined the importance of it. And actually, I think religious freedom is rare. If we look at history, it's rare. And what we have is so exceptional. It's very unusual. And I think this is very important, because many of the values that we have in our country that have led to religious freedom, to liberty, come from the Judeo-Christian stream.
Mm-hmm.
And our culture is handed down. It's learned. It's not innate. It's something that we pass down, that we teach. The Bible places such an importance on, it says, you know, teaching the children, and the children will teach their children. And so culture is something that we pass down from generation to generation. The values get passed down. If we don't teach them, it means that it only takes one generation to lose them. And this is one of the real challenges, risks in the States now. One of the dangers is that we are not teaching those values. And many people are actually ashamed of them and moving away from them.
Well, we can see that all around us all the time. And that's really convicting, because I think we talk a lot about, as Christian parents, our responsibility to teach a biblical worldview to our kids, teach them the Word of God fundamentally, and also how to live as Christians. How many of us really take the time to instill in our kids the important principles handed down to us based on the Bible from our founders, that we have the right to worship God and to love God and to be Christians openly, not just in our houses, not just in our churches, but in the public square as well. This is a fundamental freedom without which we couldn't be Americans in the way that we know we are Americans. Freedom is absolutely essential, and religious freedom is our first freedom. It's given to us by God. It's not given to us by the state. That's why we treasure it so much. And I think it was good of Pastor Brunson to point out how rare it really is in human history. He's absolutely right, and we're in danger of losing it. Now, he's asked in this clip to reflect on his experience in Turkey and comment on what he thinks Americans, and specifically American Christians, ought to understand about religious persecution and religious liberty. This is cut two.
First of all, I think it's coming to the U.S. that there will be persecution. And I was isolated for a couple of years, and coming back to the States is in some ways almost coming back to a different country in many ways. And I'm really astounded with the speed with which I think the U.S. is imploding. There are any number of issues where it seems that it's no longer enough for a person of faith to get along with or to serve or to treat well someone they disagree with. And I think that the political, business, media, celebrity class is also academia. It seems that there's much more of a demand that people of faith approve of, that they validate, that they celebrate things that actually they disagree with. And there are certainly legal challenges, but this is happening more in the public arena. And activists are demanding that businesses and schools punish those who don't agree with them.
Mm. Persecution is coming to America. Now, this is spoken from a man who's experienced persecution in Turkey and is an American and is a pastor and was stunned to return to his country and see how much it has changed. We know that it has changed, but I can only imagine how stark the change would appear to somebody who was gone for a few years. So it isn't our imagination that America is imploding. I think a lot of us think that, and I think a lot of us have thought that for a very long time. And yet it's different when you hear it coming from somebody with the understanding that Pastor Brunson has. Another cut I want to play for you. He offers some thoughts on life as it is evolving for Christians in America, not so much for Muslims. This is cut three.
I think it's especially Christians who are in the crosshairs with these things. They're the target. And as long as you stay in the church and are quiet, then they'll leave you alone, although I also think this is beginning to change. But outside the church, you're beyond the pale, and you are not supposed to talk about your beliefs, as certainly any beliefs based on the Bible. So it seems that there's an effort to marginalize and silence and shame Christians. Now, I contrast that, for example, with what's happening with Muslims in the United States. I don't think that's happening. So, for example, you don't get an LGBTQ activist going into a Muslim bakery in Dearborn, Michigan, demanding that this Muslim create a cake celebrating a wedding that he disagrees with, that according to his belief in the Quran.
Sure.
So I don't think that Muslim should be pressured. I want them to have freedom of religion here. But the Christian is being pressured. So I think that there is some hostility, especially towards Christians. Christians are the ones that are being targeted in this area. So I'm deeply concerned about the direction that our country is heading. And I think of some of the great civilizations. They didn't collapse from external attacks. They collapsed from
within.
From within. Mm. They just corrupted, decayed, and they fell. Mm. So the growing hostility to Christianity, to the Judeo-Christian values that have shaped our culture, deeply concerns me. And it used to be more on the elitist fringe, but now it's become much more mainstream.
Boy, there's so much to say there, isn't there? I have said for a long time, and I'm not the only person who has said this, that of course LGBT activists are not targeting Muslim bakeries in Dearborn. There was that video that was bicycled around for a long time showing Muslim bakery owners refusing to bake gay wedding cakes. And the question was asked, well, why in the world aren't the gay activists going nuts over the Muslims? Well, we know the answer to this because Christians are being singled out. If you are going to make the United States collapse, you have to go after Christians. You do, because they understand, even if they can't articulate it. And I'm not just speaking of LGBT activists, but all of the secular forces that are working against what our founders have handed down to us. You have to attack Christians. You have to attack Christianity because they understand that is the fundamental bedrock upon which this civilization was born and thrives. So they understand it, even if they can't tell you that they understand it. But understand what Andrew Brunson is really communicating to us. It's a warning, isn't it? It's really a warning. Christians, you better understand what's coming down the pike here. Persecution is ahead. We certainly are nowhere near the persecution levels, anywhere near the persecution levels of Christians all around the world in places like the Middle East or Nigeria, parts of Africa, Somalia, North Korea, places like that. No way, not even close. But here's the thing. We better pay attention when little signs begin and they begin to grow. And we're seeing that. We're seeing that in cases like Kim Davis, Jack Phillips, the Kleins, Baron L. Stutzman, all these Christians who have been persecuted because they said, I don't want to materially participate in a non-wedding wedding. It's against my moral convictions as a Christian. And we're seeing big tech censor Christians, and it's going to get worse. It is. And we just need to brace ourselves for this and say, Lord, whatever is ahead, we will be faithful to you. That's it. Make the decision today. Now, when we're talking about America's coming implosion, we're going to be talking about that in just a couple of minutes with Dr. Robert Jeffress, the senior pastor of First Baptist Dallas. He recently preached a sermon on this and has some good thoughts to share with us. We're going to come back. Stay with us on Janet Mefford Today. socialism is being purposely dressed up in Christian choir robes by once trusted and very influential church leaders. Their gatherings are growing in numbers as they shelve the true gospel and replace it with a false one known as the social gospel. What is this agenda to undermine the influence of Christ across the world? And whatever happened to powerful biblical Christianity? Noted producers Judd Saul, Trevor Loudon, Curtis Bowers, and Pastor Kerry Gordon of Cornerstone Church have joined forces to create enemies within the church, a hard-hitting international documentary that will reveal the plans and the players behind this movement and shine a bright light of restoration and hope upon Christ's church. We encourage you to partner with enemies within the church and help them complete this important project. To learn how to help and to stay updated about the film, go to enemieswithinthechurch.com. And while you're there, be sure to enjoy a sneak peek of the movie. Go now to enemieswithinthechurch.com. That's enemieswithinthechurch.com. Enemieswithinthechurch.com. Are you among the millions of Americans who feel uncertain when it comes to your health care? As a Christian, are you looking for health care that doesn't violate your morals and convictions? Well, we're happy to inform you that there is a solution, and that solution is Liberty Health Share. Liberty Health Share is a community of like-minded Christians who work together to pay for their medical costs. It allows you to decide how, when, and where you will access health care so you can make the best choice for you and your family. Starting at $199 a month for a single, up to $529 a month for a family. That's mom, dad, and all the kids. This is how healthcare should be. For more information, call 855-585-4237 or visit lightyourliberty.com. That's lightyourliberty.com and regain control over your healthcare costs. 855-585-4237 or lightyourliberty.com. Together, we're changing healthcare for good. On Janet Mefford today, Psalm 33:12 says, "Blessed is the nation whose God is the Lord." So what does that mean for America? Well, given our moral and spiritual and political crises, are we a nation on the brink of collapse? It really is one of those hard questions that I think a lot of us are wrestling with right now as Christians. We're going to get some thoughts on it from Dr. Robert Jeffress, senior pastor of First Baptist Dallas, who recently preached a sermon on this called America's Coming Implosion. Dr. Jeffress, great to have you with us. How are you?
Great, Janet. Good to be with you.
Great to have you here. I saw this and I thought to myself, I would really love to get Dr. Jeffress's perspective on this because this is something I hear a lot of Christians talking about. Where is this country headed? What does God think of America? What is the role of the church in these days? What are your thoughts?
Well, first of all, this isn't being fatalistic. It's being realistic. And I'm the first one to celebrate the positive direction that I've seen our nation going in the last 2 years. With a Christian, with a president who supports pro-Christian policies. But as I look at the very long term, Janet, and more importantly, I look at the Bible, we know that America is eventually going to collapse. I don't know if that's in 10 years or 10,000 years. One way I know that is from the Bible itself. When I look at the book of Revelation, I see that the final 7 years of Earth's history before the return of Jesus Christ will be a one-world government. No freedom of speech, no freedom of commerce, no freedom of religion, which means America will have ceased to exist as we know it in those final 7 years. And then I think, and I said this in my sermon, there's a practical reason I believe there's going to be an ultimate collapse or implosion, and that is what has happened in our country over the last 60 years. I use the analogy of when we imploded our facility here at First Dallas on six city blocks of downtown. They took dynamite, they attached it to the infrastructure of these buildings, they exploded the dynamite, and once the infrastructure of the buildings was gone, the buildings collapsed under their own weight. And I talked about three explosive decisions by the Supreme Court, Engle versus Vitale, 1962, that removed prayer, Roe v. Wade, 1973. 2015, Obergefell versus Hodges, that legalized same-sex marriages. I said, whenever you have a nation that basically outlaws the mention of God in the public square, that that sanctifies the murder of the unborn, over 53 million children, and destroys the most basic unit of society, the family, you know you're going to have an eventual collapse.
Well, you're right about that. And it is true that none of us know the future. We don't know when Christ will return. All of those things are hidden from us. We have to just watch as it unfolds little by little. But I think when we're looking across the spectrum of the United States, you mentioned something very important. And that was when we're talking about the eventual implosion, we're talking about a one world government, no freedom of speech, no freedom of religion. Those two in particular, I think, are very much on the minds of Christians right now. When we see how big tech is censoring Christians online and yes. content that they don't like online. And when we're seeing the attack on freedom of religion through measures like the Equality Act, for example, there is a rise here that is very concerning to the church and begs the question, what should we be doing about it?
Well, again, you know, we're not to be despondent about it. Jesus said in Matthew 5:13-14, he said, "You are the salt of the earth. You are the light of the world." And, you know, I talked about in my message that salt in Jesus' day was a preservative. It didn't prevent the decay of meat, but it did delay the decay of meat. It gave the meat a longer shelf life until it eventually had to be thrown out. And in a way, Janet, the Bible says God has left us in this world as a preservative to delay the decay of our world so that people have longer to hear the gospel of Jesus Christ. And I use this analogy. Imagine a giant dam that is in danger of collapsing, crumbling, and there's a village below filled with people who are in danger of being flooded. And a group of concerned townspeople go up and they push up against that dam. And they know ultimately their effort is futile. Ultimately, that dam is going to burst. But they are pushing back against that dam while at the same time yelling at the top of their lungs for the people below to go find safety, a place of refuge. And that's really what we Christians are trying to do. We're not going to save this culture. We're not going to prevent its ultimate collapse, but we're to push back against evil for as long as we can to give people an opportunity to hear the life-changing gospel of Jesus Christ. And that's what the light is Jesus talked about. We're to be a preservative, pushing back against evil, but at the same time, we're to be sharing the light of Jesus Christ. What we're not to be doing is getting in our little spiritual silos and insulating ourselves from the rest of the world. That's why I say Christians ought to get involved in politics. Not that we're going to save America or save the world through politics, but it is a way for us to push back against evil that threatens to engulf the world.
Yeah. Well, you know what's interesting? Somebody had said at one point, I can't remember who the original source was on this, but there have been voices out there saying, well, you know, all of these attacks on freedom of religion, they might actually be good for the church. And so maybe we should just get it, you know, let it roll along as it's been and don't worry about it. God is sovereign. And this kind of defeatist talk that a lot of us look at and say, well, wait a minute. Like you said, Dr. Jeffers, we are to be salt and light. We're not to be uninvolved and just sit home and say, Jesus will come back tomorrow, probably, so why should I lift a finger? In fact, if we lose our freedom of religion, you look at what is happening in places like China, and now they're doing an even bigger crackdown on Christianity. But in other parts of the world, the church did not grow under persecution. How do you see the loss of freedom of religion as being used by some in the church right now to say, well, we don't really need it. Don't worry about it.
The only people who think persecution is a good thing are those who never suffered persecution.
Yes,
it's real easy to be lighthearted about it or think it's good if you're not going through it yourself. We should not welcome persecution. We ought to stand up and push back against it for our Christian brothers and sisters around the world, as well as encroachments upon religious liberty in our world today. Remember, Janet, the Apostle Paul spent 2 years fighting in the Roman legal system for his rights as a Roman citizen.
Yes.
He could have said, well, okay, sirrah, sirrah, whatever will be. If I'm in prison, that's okay. No, he wanted the freedom as a Roman citizen to preach the gospel. And we ought to fight for those freedoms that our forefathers gave their life's blood to provide for us as well. And even through persecution, God can use that for good, but no sane Christian ought to welcome and invite persecution.
Well, and when you consider the history in this country of missionary activity alone, the base from which so many thousands of missionaries have gone out into the world and preached the gospel precisely because we did have First Amendment freedoms that most other countries don't enjoy, seems to be a very good argument for fighting for freedom of religion. And the good news is that we've seen a lot of support for that in our current government. The Trump administration has been very, very supportive of religious freedom. Do you see the support for President Trump's religious freedom protections, ensuring that he will be able to stay popular enough to be reelected. I know none of us know whether or not he would be reelected or what will happen in the future, but the left has fought so hard against every move by the administration to help Christians in any area. How do you see this potentially playing out as we go forward?
Well, of course, as you know, the president won election in 2016 by the largest evangelical margin in history. I think it will be even larger among Christians this next time, because this next time he's not running on promises made, but promises he has kept. And Janet, regardless of what people think about the president, I mean, he has kept every promise he has made to evangelical Christians about a conservative judiciary, and especially about the life movement and about religious liberty. So I think he's going to be strong there. Whether or not that's enough to overcome the left, I don't know. But, you know, we saw him this week at the highest approval rating of his presidency, 47%. The president told me recently, he said, Robert, remember, any poll taken about me, you can add 10 points to it, because people don't want to admit they're voting for him. But so I think he's in a good position. And look, he's the first person to say, I'm not a perfect person. But I really do believe he believes that Christianity has been marginalized in our country over the last decades, and that has not been a good thing for our country.
Yeah. When we look at the whole line that made Trump so famous, I mean, he was famous before he became president, obviously, but his signature line, Make America Great Again, all of us understand as Christians that without the biblical foundation of this country never could have become great in the first place. And really returning to full greatness as we all see it in the past, sins notwithstanding, we need the Lord again in this country. And many Christians, I think, are asking the question, what should we be doing? We need to preach the word of God. We need to fulfill the Great Commission. We need to be salt and light. But from your vantage point, Dr. Jeffress, where you are, you know, very much in ministry and very much involved in the political scene, what would you like to see average Christians doing right now to try to move this country back to a knowledge and faith in the Lord Jesus Christ?
Well, look, you know, go back to Matthew 5 and Jesus' instructions. He didn't say, you are the salt of the earth, but if you're not comfortable doing that, you can be the light of the world. You know, there's this debate among Christians about, well, do we get involved in politics and trying to push back against evil, or should we just concentrate on sharing the gospel? Well, the answer to that is yes and yes.
Right.
We're going to do both things. Christians have got to learn, Janet, to multitask if we're going to be successful in doing what God has called us to do.
That's true.
Remember, salt doesn't do the meat any good while it's still in the salt shaker. It needs to get out of the shaker. It needs to penetrate the meat. You know, it was Abraham Cooper who said, there's not one square inch of this universe over which Christ does not scream out, mine. God is not just sovereign over the church. He's sovereign over all creation, all institutions. And I believe we're to get involved and not get in our spiritual silos and wait for the end to come.
You know, you're so right about that. And I think this is one of the things that we as Christians absolutely have to embrace, that as long as the Lord tarries, we have work to do. We have to be the salt and light that Jesus has called us to be, no matter how long it is until the Lord returns. And I just take that very, very seriously. I know that you do too, Dr. Jeffress. And we thank you so much, Dr. Robert Jeffress, for being with us. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back on Janet Mefford Today. This Janet Mefford Today podcast is brought to you by Enemies Within the Church, a documentary that will expose the false teachers and underlying agenda to undermine the influence of Christ across the world. For more information, visit enemieswithinthechurch.com. Welcome back to Janet Mefford Today. In a letter to a Dutch student in 1873, Charles Darwin had this to say: the impossibility of conceiving that this grand and wondrous universe without conscious selves arose through chance seems to me the chief argument for the existence of God. But whether this is an argument of real value, I have never been able to decide. I think this is rather ironic, as Charles Darwin is treated like something of a god himself to today's evolutionists. But when you take a look at the Christian worldview and the creation model, it's easy to see that that science is compatible with biblical truth, and that's why we have to teach the truth to our children. We're going to talk about this today with former NASA engineer Jay Schaubacher. He has worked on the Apollo moon program and is out with a book called Scientific Challenges to Evolutionary Theory, How These Challenges Affect Religion. Jay, it is just wonderful to have you with us. How are you?
Thank you. I'm fine. I'm glad to talk to your folks. Yes.
Well, thank you. It's great to have you here. I thought it was very interesting as I was reading through your book, you say you discovered that the number of scientists who actually believe in creation is a very great number. And I thought that's kind of interesting because that's not normally what you hear.
Well, it's true. The evolutionists say their science and creationists are not science. It's just the opposite, though. It's just the opposite. Science supports creation. And I had a difficult time visiting Mount St. Helens, the bookstore.
Mm-hmm.
My wife and I were at Mount St. Helens, and I asked about the books for sale, and if books that gave a Christian view of the catastrophic eruption. The reply was, "I'm sorry, but we only carry books by scientists."
Oh, boy.
That disturbed me. And it was time for me at that time to do a little research of my own. And I learned, contrary to some opinion, there's 1,000 scientists, PhD scientists, who repudiate the theory of evolution.
Yeah.
And that's why I started to research and write and find out, frankly, why evolutionists will not debate creationist scientists anymore.
Hmm.
They found out they couldn't win.
Wow. Well, I mean, you obviously have a lot of experience having worked for NASA. I mean, you have a lot of credibility there. What have you experienced in the way of running into scientists on either side of the aisle? Did you meet a lot of creationists along the way? Was that even something that would come up as you were working with the Apollo moon program?
I don't believe I've met any evolutionist scientists. I've been in the circles of creationists for years and years and years.
Yeah.
But thinking back on the Apollo moon program, our Lord God uses all of this advanced good. The Apollo program was about pure technology, not chance.
Right, right.
And as you look back, there was God in it. One small step for man, one large step for mankind.
Yes, right.
It is still about science and technology as the creationists say, not about what chance, as the evolutionists say. So in my view, God is showing creation using the 1,000 PhD science to just move that forward. And I believe he shows it is good for mankind as we explore our moon.
Yes.
So I think it's pretty pertinent.
Oh, yeah. Well, you note in your book, and I know all of us have observed this as well, that Darwinian evolution is also the dominant theory taught in schools, even though it's a theory and not factual. You know, what are your concerns about evolution being the dominant theory that is pushed on kids? Because this is what the next generation will believe if this is the only information they're receiving.
Well, the horrible truth is that evolution gives a bad thing for each of us. Walt Brown gave the consequences of a belief in evolution, and he actually had 13 of them. So many I won't mention them. One's abortion, one's racism. But the New Age movement allows people to say, I'm not responsible for everything. I have no moral responsibility.
Right.
We've got animal-like behavior, and you can see where people are doing crazy things, just what they want to do. And so... evil is taking over from good, and I believe it's taking over because of the belief in evolution. School children are given this kind of belief, and they have nothing else to think about. And that's why one of the reasons for me writing the book is to talk about, let's look at the evolution story and repudiate it, and let's see if we can get evolution taught in the public schools or at least have Christian schools teaching creation, or maybe homeschools
yes.
teaching creation. And that's been the result of my book, I hope.
I want to go back, too, to what you said when you said that evolutionists really are practicing it as a religion. What do you mean by that? When you talk about evolution really being a religion for those who adhere to it rather than a scientific theory.
The evolutionists, it's the creation of the devil and his minions. And so then from that, you have to come up with an argument. And their argument is that things just happened. But that isn't from science. And so they have various people who admit that the evolution is actually not exactly a science, but is a religion. And there's a few people who have actually said that.
It comes down to one of the other issues that has come up time after time when you're talking about creation versus evolution, and that is the inability of these evolutionists to explain where matter came from. If you're talking about a Big Bang, you still would have to have matter that exploded and turned into all of these things that surround us today. They really don't have an answer for that, do they? Because wouldn't you have to have a first cause in order to have anything happen in the first place and have to have matter to exist in order for it to simultaneously, you know, turn into all of the things that we see around us? It doesn't make any sense.
One person said there are significant scientific problems with attempts to explain the formation of stars and planets from clouds of gas and dust. Our comment is, but where did the dust come from?
Right.
And the clouds of gas. The Big Bang, where would all that come from? So, as many say, they can only go back so far as to say, well, something was there and then something else happened.
Right.
But as R.C. Sproul and others say, well, there's no chance that anything that happened. And so there's no argument there.
Well, that's right. That's right. It doesn't make any sense. And they don't really try to explain how can there be something rather than nothing. Why is that? That really seems to be a sticking point for them. What can you say? Why there is something rather than nothing? Why are we not just living, you know, never living at all? Why are we here? Why do we have consciousness? There are lots and lots and lots of things that these evolutionists simply cannot answer. What should the Christian say, though? If you're encountering an evolutionist, whether you're at work with somebody who says, I believe Darwin was right, what would you emphasize as a Christian and as somebody who understands science? How would you start that conversation and say, this is why evolution is not the case and it's not to be believed? Where would you start?
Well, it's difficult because it's a frame of mind the devil is in charge of. But my easy answer is recommend some books like my book, or there's many others. Henry Morse did a bunch of books like that.
Right.
And then if they read these books, there's a number of arguments that are persuasive. I give arguments in my book. The problems of the items that the fossils that they've come up with, they invented these fossils, and there's arguments that show there's so much frauds going on in the evolutionary story.
Right. Well, it's important for people to be challenged on this because, as we discussed before, there are so many schools that are teaching kids this is the way it is. Well, we thank you for being with us, Jay Schabacher, and we're so glad you could be with us. Scientific Challenges to Evolutionary Theory is his book. Jay, thank you so much for stopping by. We appreciate it very much.
Thank you. I appreciate it also.
All right. God bless you. We'll be back on Janet Mefford Today. Socialism is being purposely dressed up in Christian choir robes by once trusted and very influential church leaders. Their gatherings are growing in numbers as they shelve the true gospel and replace it with a false one known as the social gospel. What is this agenda to undermine the influence of Christ across the world? And whatever happened to powerful biblical Christianity? Noted producers Judd Saul, Trevor Loudon, Curtis Bowers, and Pastor Kerry Gordon of Cornerstone Church have joined forces to create enemies within the church, a hard-hitting international documentary that will reveal the plans and the players behind this movement and shine a bright light of restoration and hope upon Christ's church. We encourage you to partner with enemies within the church and help them complete this important project. To learn how to help and to stay updated about the film, go to enemieswithinthechurch.com. And while you're there, be sure to enjoy a sneak peek of the movie. Go now to enemieswithinthechurch.com. That's enemieswithinthechurch.com. Enemieswithinthechurch.com. This is Janet Mefford, here to tell you that preborn saves lives.
But he was like, you're not ready for another baby. And at that moment, I felt that I'm not going to be able to be a mom to this baby. So I came to the pregnancy clinic. She said, they go to heartbeat. That changed my life just from that ultrasound picture.
The Ministry of Preborn supports young moms in crisis with love and support and free ultrasounds. Because when a woman sees her baby on ultrasound, she's more likely to choose life. In fact, 8 out of 10 women will choose life when they see their babies on ultrasound. Would you please join Preborn in the cause for life? For $140, you can sponsor 5 ultrasounds. All gifts are tax deductible, and 100% of your sponsorship goes to saving babies. To donate, call 855-402-BABY. That's 855-402-2229, 855-402-BABY, or there's a banner to click at janetmefford.com. Your love can save a life. We're back on Janet Mefford today. I want to return to the subject of religious liberty. We started out the show talking about Pastor Andrew Brunson and his remarks at this recent Western Conservative Summit and his prediction that persecution is coming to Christians in America. And I would argue that we've already seen it on a very minor level, No bloodshed, I can't say no imprisonment, because Kim Davis was thrown in jail for refusing to sign a marriage license for 2 men. So we've already had, you know, we crossed that bridge. But we had all these Christians, as we know, who have even lost their businesses because they were really targeted by these LGBT activists, whom, as we know, don't go after Muslims the same way. And it is frustrating. And it's funny how that particular sector of society is continually pointed to when it comes to talking about Christians as being bad, 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 bad. Well, you know what? You guys introduced a brand new morality, even though it's not moral, a brand new morality into American life. And now everything that has been good and right has to be undone. And we have to, you know, make sure that the boot stamping on our face forever is something that we enjoy. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen, and it won't end well, barring the Lord's return, which I pray for all the time, by the way. But here's a story in The Atlantic. The Atlantic is always a reliable place to read garbage, if I may say so. It is so liberal, it's not even funny, and it's so biased, and it's just awful, and I get great material there. Anyway, they have this article at The Atlantic called The Religious Freedom Agenda, and the term religious freedom, of course, is in scare quotes. It's religious freedom. Because, you know, there is no such thing as actual religious freedom. It's so-called religious freedom. Now, if you're going to say so-called gay marriage, because there's no such thing as gay marriage. And this whole article is about the fact that this week, Sam Brownback, who is heading up the Office of International Religious Freedom, is heading up this second annual ministerial to advance religious freedom this week, along with Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. And the whole thing kind of goes through religion. Here's how this writer phrases it to kick things off. Behind the Oval Office circus of drama and distraction, conservatives are quietly reshaping government in ways that could resonate for generations to come. Doesn't that sound ominous? Ooh, those conservatives are quietly reshaping government. Yes, yeah, so quietly that you're writing about it, sir. One major front is the integration of religion into foreign policy. Is that what we're doing? We're integrating religion into foreign policy, in which the phrase religious freedom figures prominently in the same way it did during the George W. Bush administration. As it is not partial to any particular religion, religious freedom avoids running afoul of the Constitution's Establishment Clause. It also has a footprint in the existing federal bureaucracy. And he goes on to describe this ministerial that is taking place. Brownback did an interview, apparently, with this reporter. Not really sure why. Anyway, Andrew Brunson will be a part of this gathering this week. And Then he goes through all this nonsense and quotes Brownback here and there. And he says, when talking with counterparts from the Arab world, Brownback told me, he often finds the best approach is to give voice to his own spiritual life, presenting himself as one person of faith speaking to another. Religious minorities, he said, have to be free to be able to choose among faiths. Because God created us to be free, he said, a government can't infringe upon that right. God, he went on, didn't make us robots. Could have, didn't. Well, why didn't he? He knew we wouldn't all make the right choice, right? So there must be something incredibly valuable to this right to freedom in God's eyes. This is all a quote, by the way, from Sam Brownback. Along with Pompeo's new Commission on Unalienable Rights, a 10-member panel tasked with questioning the premises of contemporary human rights discourse, one can see in the ministerial an effort to make Washington the center of a global faith-based conservative order with its own doctrine of intervention and hierarchy of values, an order that seeks to augment and perhaps even compete with the existing liberal one. Can I just stop and say this? Liberals, you guys are the ones who left the reservation, because religious freedom has been the bedrock of American society since we passed the Bill of Rights. Since the First Amendment has been in place, Americans have agreed that our first freedom is religious freedom, freedom of speech, everything contained in the First Amendment. Those are rights given to us by God. We are free people. You guys on the left are the ones who went nuts. Not us. It's an American value. It isn't only a conservative value. And if you're saying it's just a conservative value, then what you are saying is that you've, like I said, you've gone off the rails. Not our fault. Brownback, he talks about, has been a vocal critic of what's going on in China and some of these concentration camps, unlike what AOC says, these really are concentration camps. And he, you know, is very concerned about what's going on in China and the people who are locked up and they're taking freedoms away. And they're, you know what they're doing in churches. And they're telling them, we don't like that commandment. Erase it from the Ten Commandments display that you have up on your wall, Pastor. But here's where it really goes off the rails. This writer from The Atlantic says, somewhat like human rights and economic development, religious freedom is a rhetorical Swiss Army knife. What? A versatile generality, half tool and half weapon, that no reasonable person can oppose. In the United States, support for religious freedom cuts across party lines. The International Religious Freedom Act, which created Brownback's office, was signed into law by Bill Clinton in 1998. And state has announced this scheduled panel with Brownback and also Frank Wolf, a religious freedom fighter, Nancy Pelosi, of all people. Religious freedom-based appeals have been especially useful for Christian conservatives who have used the term to rally support for the Cold War, chip away at prohibitions on church-based political endorsements, and defend the public observance of Christmas. Oh, those crazy nuts. In 2016, Martin R. Castro, who was appointed by Obama to chair the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights, wrote that religious freedom is often used as a code word for discrimination, intolerance, racism, sexism, homophobia, Islamophobia, and Christian supremacy. Indeed, religious freedom arguments were deployed by Hobby Lobby to the Supreme Court to argue against its obligation under the Affordable Care Act to offer contraception to employees. More than 100 state house bills across the country use religious freedom as the grounds for everything from campus free speech policies to discrimination by private businesses against same-sex couples. Okay, that's just a flat-out lie. Nobody's doing that. Nobody is discriminating in private businesses against same-sex couples unless you were talking about Christian schools who have the right under the Constitution to live according to their religious beliefs. And when you have somebody come in who's gay and married to somebody of the same sex, quote unquote, they have the right to fire them. And when you look at these cases, those people are fired because they're not abiding by the contract they signed and agreed to. Big deal. You don't see in these bakeries, you don't see in these floral shops, Christians saying, oh, you're gay, I'm not going to give you a cupcake. Nobody is doing that. This is what I'm talking about. When we go back to what Brunson said about growing animosity toward Christianity, this is where it's showing up. In these kinds of pieces, and there are tons of them on the internet every day, I'm reading stuff like this, garbage like this. But think about what's happening as the average American who doesn't know the truth is reading these pieces, and this is what they're taking as gospel truth. Oh, those discriminatory Christians. You're maligning Christians is what you're doing. You're marginalizing Christians. You're slapping, you know, a terrible moniker onto Christians. Those are the people who are discriminatory. They're painting religious freedom, in other words, as something that's bad. When you're calling it a veritable Swiss Army knife, how much do you really believe in religious freedom? And I'll tell you what the real standout paragraph in this whole thing is. This is it. Critics worry. We don't know who these critics are. It's probably the reporter and his friends. Critics worry that the commission's stated focus on natural and unalienable rights could mean reversing the LGBTQ community's hard-won and very recent progress toward equality and the right to marry. You know, we were here first, so deal with it. We had a First Amendment long before we ever had Stonewall, and we don't get to lose our rights to religious freedom simply because we got more immoral in this country and decided to try to reverse morality and replace it with immorality and make people celebrate it. We are so upside down. We are so wicked in this country. We're wicked. Everybody has the same rights under the Constitution. But those people who said years ago, you don't give special rights to somebody because of their sexual preferences. Well, we're seeing what happens when you open that Pandora's box. And what loses in this scenario? Christians will lose. Christians will lose. I actually think from all of the years that I've spent watching this whole thing unfold, this is the movement, man. This is why we did our God's Voice conference, because we were trying to draw attention to the fact that they want to change the church from within. They've already won the culture, haven't they? It's everywhere. You can't get away from it. It is absolutely pervasive. And if the church doesn't wake up to what is going on, I don't know what the future will look like. I know we have to be faithful to Jesus Christ regardless. But be aware when you're reading your newspaper or your favorite website or some source here or some source there or watching the evening news, watch for this kind of language, because this is exactly how you propagandize a population. Christians, we have to fight against this, and we have to stand on the Word of God at an hour like this. Thanks for joining us. We're out of time, but we appreciate you tuning in every single day here on Janet Mefford Today. God bless, and we'll see you next time.